Thank you. We're also joined by Rodan Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
Congressman, there's a lot of debate in top Democratic circles these days about whether Hillary Clinton should spend more time developing a clear positive message for her campaign or sharpening her attacks on Donald Trump. Which do you think she should spend more time and emphasis on?
As a policy person, I always say, you know, stick to the substance of the issues and tell the American people how you're going to make their lives better. Clearly, the American families, middle-class families, and people that are the lower end of the income scale are stressed more than ever, and we've got to do a better job of achieving income equality, and we need to do a better job of telling people how we're gonna get them back to work and make their lives better. I want to see Hillary focus on growing the middle class and making sure that people fully can realize the American dream. And that's what I'd like to see done. Now, unfortunately, in a tough, you know, political environment, it does seem that, you know, the attacks between both sides of what is grabbing the headlines. I wish that the media and certainly the candidates would focus more on substance.
Hillary Clinton hasn't held a press conference in more than 6 months, and she declined to speak to the Inspector General for the State Department when the IG was looking at the scandal involving her email server. What kind of message does that send?
Well, her answer was, as I recall, that she first wanted to have the FBI conclude its investigation and their work. I think it would have been helpful for her to talk to the Inspector General, but I don't know what goes into making those decisions. I just want all the facts to come out. Let's determine where we go from here. Let the facts speak for themselves.
Let's go to Scott.
There's been some controversy here in Rhode Island about legislative grants, and I know you serve both in the Rhode Island legislature and now you're in Congress. It always surprised me that you folks in Washington get lionized when you bring home a federal program to Rhode Island, but somehow if you do it at the State House, it's like slippery. And I'm wondering just what you think, as someone who's been in both places, you could do to help this grant issue here in Rhode Island.
Well, first of all, I think it's all about transparency. I think the overwhelming work that many of the reps and senators that are working on issues and in terms of legislative grants, that they do good things, but it's about transparency. I know that Speaker Mattiello and Senate President Pivoweed are re-looking at all of this to see how they bring more accountability and transparency to the process. And when I was Secretary of State, by the way, I always believed in open government, giving the power of information to the people. That's who it rightly belongs to. And the more you put out there and shine the spotlight of accountability on facts, what is actually going on, that's the best disinfectant.
Your district includes Burrillville, where there's a hot debate over a proposed power plant. Do you support or oppose that proposal?
I am following the issue closely. It's more of a state issue at this point. I do believe that we need to transition off of fossil fuels. I'm a big proponent of developing alternative sources of energy, wind, solar, geothermal, and biofuels, of course. In the meantime, though, you're going to have these gap energy issues, and that's, I believe, that natural gas can be a viable option that we have to look at and support.
Given the future of energy, though, why aren't we buying more Canadian hydropower, which, as you know, is renewable, rather than investing in yet another fossil fuel plant?
Yeah, and so we should be doing all of that. I would say that, first of all, I would love to see a plan where we are not only buying more renewable energy, but we're also creating incentives for developing these types of programs. I mean, it's going to cost money. We certainly have the federal tax credit for wind and solar, for example. It's a 30% tax credit. That's how you provide the seed money for developing these, and you achieve economies of scale that brings down price.
To come back to presidential politics for a second, do you think Donald Trump should release his tax returns?
I'll leave that to Donald Trump to decide. First of all, he talks about the fact that how much he's worth and all that. I will say this, for anybody that's running for public office, the disclosure requirements are significant. But when you're running for the highest office of the land, you know, there's There's certainly a different standard there, and I think a lot of the information you can obtain it from the federal disclosures, which are significant.
Please correct me if I'm wrong, but am I correct in believing that you traditionally have not chosen to release your tax returns? Is that correct?
That's right.
And when most public officials in high public office in Rhode Island are willing to release those, why are you not willing to do so?
Yeah, I've always said that, as I just mentioned, that the federal conflict of interest statements, the federal disclosure forms, are thorough and significant, and all of the information I believe that you need, that you can get from that information. For me personally, my medical expenses are private related issues, and I choose not to really to release my tax returns. But I do believe in transparency, and that's why I think the federal filings are so important, because all of my financial records and assets are listed, and you can get the information that you need the public to scrutinize through
those. We're bringing back earmarks, Congressman, make the House work a little bit better and more efficient.
I have always been proud of the federal resources that I have advocated for, whether it's earmarks or others, and I've always believed it's about transparency. You know, when I've fought for things like federal dollars for community health centers, for our colleges and universities, you name it, these are the things that I've been proud to advocate for, and I've always made it public about what we're advocating for. There are some that have abused the process, and that's why ostensibly earmarks went away, but it's about accountability, transparency.
You've made a particular focus for a long time on cyber terrorism, and that's an issue we've heard a lot more on in recent years. Some people think the idea of a cyber Pearl Harbor is greatly overrated and overheated. Do you think the U.S. will be hit at some point in the future by the cyber equivalent of Pearl Harbor?
We very well could be hit by a cyber Pearl Harbor, if you will, a major attack on critical infrastructure, for example. It's one of those things certainly that keeps me up late at night. The reality is right now that the worst cyber weapons are in the hands of nation states, for example, like China or Russia, who certainly have the cyber weapons to launch a major cyber attack, but not necessarily the will. But you have groups like Al-Qaeda or ISIL that certainly they have the will, but not the cyber weapons. I've always said that my concern is, how long is it before that that gap is bridged and the worst cyber weapons are in the worst hands? We have got to do a better job of protecting ourselves in cyberspace. The information sharing bill, by the way, that just passed in a strong bipartisan way at the end of last Congress, is an example of how we are better inoculating ourselves from malware and viruses that are out there. But our work is not yet done.
The U.S. announced in April it was stepping up cyber attacks against ISIS. Are those attacks proving effective?
I know that we are going after ISIS more aggressively, and I'm not going to get into to classified information, but I know that we are looking at leaving no stone unturned at how we degrade ISIL and their capabilities, and better protect our troops and our friends and allies in the region, and ultimately protecting the American people. And I think that we need to have all hands on deck and use all assets of national power, by the way, including...
That really doesn't answer the question of whether these stepped-up attacks are proving effective.
Well, I will say that we're using everything at our disposal to go after ISIL, and we're having great success, but our work is not yet done.
You've been in Congress since 2000. What's your thinking on how long you would hope to be in Congress?
As long as the people of Rhode Island would like me to continue to serve as their congressman, I intend to run for re-election. I have to reapply for my job every 2 years. The office is not a birthright for anybody. I'm just a mere custodian of an office that belongs to the people of Rhode Island that I'm privileged to represent. As long as they want me to keep serving, it's my privilege to continue to serve in Congress.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
And from the 2nd District of Rhode Island, Congressman Jim Lanchman.
Thank you, Ian.